families. I mean, here she says they are waiting for her fingerprints. Then in other cases, we hear DNA.
They may not be able to reunite with their uncle or their grandmother, who are clearly relatives. And if they do get a DNA test, they have to pay for that. They're also concerned about fingerprints. There's been a lot of collaboration between this agency taking care of children and ICE and enforcement. What I looked at, or what is some of the next steps that these parents have to face once they're reunited? Laura has done a great job of trying to emphasize Central American voices who are refugees in a refugee crisis fleeing Central America. I think journalists can also look closely at how the Trump administration is clamping down on the rights of these people as they go through court to seek asylum. Families come to the United States to seek asylum. This case that I reported on in my story for The Nation suggests that parents who get their asylum claim denied, which is very likely to happen with new limits that Sessions has implemented here, they may have to decide, am I going to go back to the country that I fled with my child, or am I going to leave my child in the United States to face a separate asylum claim? They have additional opportunities that they could pursue. But these are parents whose children think they abandoned them. We've heard reports that the children can't even remember what their parents look like. And now, once that parent's reunited, if they're able to be reunited, they're going to have to face a second separation.
We're going to continue to follow this next week. Thank you very much, Democracy Now!'s Renee Feltz. We'll link to your piece at The Nation. That does it for this broadcast. Happy birthday to Karl Marxer. Democracy Now! Produced by an amazing group of people. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:00. Coming up next is your KBOO Evening News, because it's Friday and it's 5:00.
Hi, I'm Rick Mitchell, and I would like to invite you to check out my program, Jazz in the New Millennium, at KBOO.fm. Each one-hour program focuses on a living jazz artist, putting their work in historical perspective, from their earliest recordings to their most recent. The current season features such legends as McCoy Tyner, Wynton Marsalis, and Dee Dee Bridgewater, as well as rising stars Julian Lage, Joy Alexander, and Tia Fuller. New shows are posted weekly, and you can also find the complete first season. The program is syndicated nationally by the African American Public Radio Consortium, but it can be heard anytime on KBOO's website by going to the drop-down menu on the homepage, clicking on Audio, then Podcasts, and scrolling down to the Jazz in the New Millennium page. That's Jazz in the New Millennium with Rick Mitchell at KBOO.fm.
Radio is proud to co-sponsor Pass the Mic on Friday, July 20th from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Franklin High School in Portland. Pass the Mic aims to decrease isolation and find ways to connect youth to carve out their own expressive safe space and to share it in their own creative terms. This five-day music camp culminates in a closing concert by the Immigrant and Refugee Youth Campers, featuring their bands and performances created during the week. Again, that's Pass the Mic on Friday, July 20th from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Franklin High School, 5405 Southeast Woodward Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
So it's 5:00, and that means it's time for your KBOO Evening News. This KBOO program is made possible by KBOO listener members and Northwest String Summit, now in their 17th year, providing a family-friendly music camping festival featuring Greensky Bluegrass, Yonder Mountain Stringman, and more. July 19th through July 22nd at Horning's Hideout in North Plains. Tickets and more information online at stringsummit.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Mount Hood Rescue is in motion.
Papa John's is fired.
In international news, Trump breaks tradition in UK.
Thank you.
Good evening. This is the KBOE Evening News for Friday, July 13th, 2018. I'm Dallas Marchant.
And I'm Jenny Yokoyama. Oregon Live reports helicopter crews are headed to Mount Hood to rescue a climber from the summit. Spokesman for the Oregon Army National Guard, Christopher Ingersoll, said two helicopters are responding to the state's tallest mountain. Most helicopters have a difficult time flying above summit because the air is so thin, said Ingersoll. The summit of Mount Hood is 11,200 feet, which is not large enough to accommodate a helicopter. Oregon Live reported a Chinook helicopter will be used for the summit rescue because of the altitude of 11,000 feet and a number of people involved. It's also difficult to hold a helicopter still while operating the rescue. Steve Rollins, a rescue leader from Portland Mountain Rescue, said six rescuers are with the climber. Ingersoll said he does not know if someone will have to drop onto the summit to assist. Clackamas County hasn't returned calls yet for more information. According to Mount Hood National Forest website, Mount Hood attracts more than 10,000 climbers a year.
John Schnatter, the former CEO of Papa John's, is now no longer the face of the pizza chain. Schnatter's face had been removed from the company's website logo, while some parts of the website exist with his face still laminated on different pages, despite being on the pizza boxes, commercials, and making appearances in the interior of the stores. On Wednesday, Schnatter apologized for using the N-word in a conference phone exercise on public relations with marketing company Laundry Service that happened in May. Executives of the chain pronounced that Schnatter is no longer part of the chain and is, quote, not aware, end quote, of any ideas to change the company name.
United States President Donald Trump broke tradition of etiquette when meeting Queen Elizabeth during his trip to the United Kingdom. President Trump and First Lady Melania had both greeted the Queen of England with a handshake rather than a bow or a curtsy, two greetings that are thought of as good-mannered. However, bowing and curtsying are not imperative. While attempting to walk together during the Coldstream Guard inspection, Trump and the Queen got into some confusion. Trump stepped in front of the Queen, leading the stroll and blocking her from the inspection of her own guard. The Queen, taken aback by the forward gesture, stood pensive for a moment before appearing to shoo the president forward with several hand waves. This is the first time the United States president has met the Queen of England.
On July 12th at the Chemeketa Business Building in Salem, Oregon, the Autonomous Vehicle Task Force for Oregon met to discuss and vote on continuing forward with recommendations that will be brought forward to the Oregon legislature. All 31 members of the task force, with the exception of two substitutes, were present, including four members of the Oregon legislature, autonomous vehicle experts, automotive industry workers, and Oregon State Police officers. KBOE's summer intern Emmett White took the trip down to Salem to explore Oregon's future in regards to autonomous vehicle testing and deployment. The AV task force has been divided into four subcommittees, each tasked with divulging the possible issues presented by the technology of autonomous vehicles and creating proactive solutions to these impending issues. The four subcommittees are as follows: licensing and registration, law enforcement and crash reporting, insurance and liability, and cybersecurity and long-term policy. Each subcommittee presented their current recommendations on how to move forward with the process of creating legislation in Oregon and then opened up the discussion to the public as well as members of other subcommittees. Look forward to this in an in-depth piece and the full substance of the meeting as well as the amendments created next week.
Portland's Carmageddon is in full swing and continues to close major portions of the city's interstate system, with the newest closure being southbound lanes of Interstate 5, beginning at the Fremont Bridge and continuing to the intersection of I-5 and 84's entrance ramp, which is still currently closed. ODOT crews will grind down and repave the section of I-5 during the closure, which began on Friday, July 13th at 10 p.m. and will last until July 16th, when the southbound lanes will be reopened at 5 a.m. In order to maintain a somewhat civilized flow of traffic, those looking to use the I-5 southbound lanes through Portland City Central will be diverted onto I-405 and over the Fremont Bridge. This will allow most commuters to reach the city center in a similar manner to reach I-5 southbound near the Markham Bridge. However, those looking to exit I-5 at its Broadway exit or looking to join I-84 eastbound from I-5 southbound will be sorely disappointed. Three interstate on-ramps will be closed this weekend in accordance with the I-5 southbound repaving project. These entrance ramps include North Going Street on-ramp, North Greeley Avenue on-ramp, and North Winning Way on-ramp. North I-5 commuters will not be affected by repaving until later this summer. Interstate Bridge, which crosses the Columbia River at the Washington and Oregon border near Vancouver, will be intermittently closed starting at 10 p.m. on July 13th, while ODOT crews grease cables. The temporary closing will last up to 25 minutes, and during this time, pedestrians and bicyclists will not be allowed on the bridge in addition to motor vehicle traffic. These temporary lifts will overlap into Saturday, July 14th. The 6 miles of bridge cable that require greasing are annually serviced, and upon completion this summer will not be subject to further closure until next summer. For more information on summer interstate closures, go to bigfixpdx.com.
Bend, Oregon will be the last city in the United States to have a Blockbuster movie rental store by next week. This particular Blockbuster store hasn't been updated in a very long time and still sports the yellow and blue exterior and interior, old computers, and rows of DVDs on shelves. Before Bend, Oregon, Alaska was still the host for the most Blockbusters in the country. In 2013, the Alaskan Blockbuster stores began to decline, leaving only 3 open currently this year. Sunday will be the last day for these stores. Blockbuster was the store that everyone would flood to on a Friday night, as it was the sultan of video game and movie rentals in the 90s. When Netflix made its debut, Blockbuster declared bankruptcy in 2010. Dish Network bought the rest of the company's stores. In April, stores across the country were closing down, but the Bend, Oregon location doesn't plan on closing anytime soon, as it will continue to serve its customers and tourists. Rumors say it will become a museum.
Wolves surrounded the trunk of a tree while a research student was calling for help 30 feet up in the air in Winthrop, Washington. Local law enforcement answered the student's call coming from a popular recreational area near Tiffany Spring Campground on Thursday. The unnamed researcher said she was scouting the space when she came across wolves and immediately climbed a nearby tree. The Department of Natural Resources helicopter team, search and rescue crew, and local law enforcement had to come to the researcher's rescue. The DNR's helicopter team was able to rescue the student.
A Salem man has claimed $150 million. KGW8 reports after almost 3 weeks, the winner of Powerball jackpot has finally stepped forward to claim their prize. KGW8 says Oregon Lottery officials revealed Friday morning Stephen Nickel is the owner of the lucky ticket purchased at a Circle K on Liberty Road in South Salem. Nickel told lottery officials he had no idea he had won the Powerball when he turned in his ticket. He said, quote, "When the clerk told me that I won over $600 and I have to go to the lottery office, I thought I could buy my wife something nice for the 4th of July," end quote. He had no idea that the ticket was worth over $150 million. Nickel is the 5th winner of the Powerball jackpot in Oregon. Milwaukee resident Dan Gannon was the state's last winner before Nickel. He won $182.7 million in 2006.
The Seattle Times released a story today with the title, "Emboldened by Trump, Proud Boys Confrontations Raise Concerns in the Northwest." The article by Hal Brenton talks about the case of Mikel Mosley, a black teen who came out of the Vancouver Mall on May 11th and saw a pickup truck flying a Donald Trump flag. Mosley yelled an obscenity about Trump, and 2 men got out of the truck and chased Mosley, one of the men throwing him onto the ground. A video of the altercation went viral showing the incident and its fallout, which included Mosley being given over by mall guards to police who arrested him. Clark County prosecuting attorney Tony Golick identified Tutsalala, aka Tony Tusay, as the man who grabbed Mosley. Another man named Donovan Flippo admitted to also chasing Mosley on Facebook. Both Flippo and Tusay described themselves as members of the Proud Boys, self-proclaimed fraternal white supremacist group who is also often being described as aligned with right-wing politics. The club's motto says the members are, quote, "Western chauvinists who refuse to apologize for creating the modern world, give everyone a gun, venerate a housewife, and shut down the government," end quote. Nonprofit action group Western State Center intervened on behalf of Mosley and asked Golick to drop the felony charges of criminal trespassing and 2 counts of third-degree assault for allegedly punching 2 mall officers, citing security guards' accounts did not match up with the officers' accounts or the video. On June 29th, Golick dropped the charges, saying the decision in the court filing was, quote, "in the best interest of justice," unquote. A woman who had attempted to help Mosley during the incident and who was also charged had the filings dropped as well. In response to the attack, Mosley said, quote, "I don't know what to say about it. It was just random. I didn't even know that they, Tosi and Flippo, were a part of anything, to be honest."
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Federation of Indian Service Employees says three presidential executive orders are ill-conceived and an attack on civil service employees. The union is joining a lawsuit against the Trump administration. Matt Laszlo has the story from Washington.
Sue Parton is president of the Federation of Indian Service Employees, which represents the four agencies operating under the Department of Interior that provide services to Native Americans. She was angry on May 25th when President Trump issued a series of executive orders to cut back the power of government unions and make it easier for agencies to fire civil servants.
It really, to me, impairs our employees' ability to do the job, which ultimately is to provide services to the Native people.
According to Parton, it's these agreements that hold companies together and protect employees.
But also, more than that, allowed us to collaborate with managers, with management, and human resource offices to address any workplace issues that fell within the collective bargain, the CBA.
Parton says these protections that were once ensured are now completely undermined by the set of executive orders. But the president doesn't see it that way. To Trump, the orders fulfill a campaign promise to create a shift in the federal bureaucracy. White House officials say their goal is to make the federal workforce more efficient and responsive to the public and to improve morale for employees who play by the rules. Instead of simply bearing the brunt of the administration's actions, the Federation announced that it would join other national labor organizations in suing the president, claiming he overstepped his authority, violated the U.S. Constitution, and infringed on the separation of powers between the executive and Congress. And Parton says it's about banding together.
I really see the services that these agencies are supposed to provide to the Native people being, once again, cut back and curtailed.
For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
More than 40 airmen from the South Carolina Air National Guard and other military members have been deployed to Gallup, New Mexico, to help build homes for Navajo people. The Civil Engineer Squad is constructing framed houses in a warehouse and on the reservation. The project is a 20-year partnership between the Southwest Indian Foundation and the military. Jeremy Boucher is with the foundation.
It's not a mobile home. It's not a modular home. It's actually a typical residential home. It's just the difference is we start here in the warehouse, and so we move the house out in two pieces. They're not huge homes. They're very simple, as efficient as we can make them. After it's about 75% complete in the warehouse, then we'll move it out to site, and then we finish it up out there. We put a couple of porches and a little porch roof. We put a little sidewalk around, handicap ramps if that's necessary for the family's needs, and then just do some minor finishing inside the home.
The military members will work on the homes for the next 2 weeks. The foundation is donating 10 homes this year to eligible Navajo veterans. In the last two decades, more than 200 homes have been constructed for Navajo people through the project. The Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe in South Dakota has declared a disaster following storms which hit the reservation in late June through early July. The tribe says the storms were more violent than anticipated, and many residents went without power for days and lost structures. The storm also impacted vegetation and grazing land. The tribe has implemented a command center for residents. The disaster declaration will help the tribe and members with additional resources to recover from the storms. On Thursday, President Trump made additional disaster assistance available for the Seminole Tribe of Florida. The increased funding is expected to help with projects after 2017 Hurricane Irma impacted the tribe. Other tribes in Florida and Alabama were also impacted by the hurricane. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on Counterspin. At 6, it's Bread and Roses. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather in Portland, the lowest temperature will be 79 degrees. In Hood River, 81 degrees. And in the Dalles, 84 degrees, both at 10 p.m. Make sure to keep hydrated and bring your pets inside. Today in history, John F. Kennedy was nominated July 13, 1960 for presidency by the Democratic Party, defeating Lyndon B. Johnson. Later on it, Johnson would become Kennedy's running mate. The quote of the day is from Alexis de Tocqueville, a political scientist and historian. He's best known for promoting and analyzing democratic structures. He said, quote, "There are many men of principle in both parties in America, but there is no party of principle."
And next we hear The Week in Water from H2O Radio.
Are there possible upsides with the new EPA chief? That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
After Scott Pruitt, the ethics challenged administrator of the EPA, resigned last week, questions were being asked about his interim replacement, Andrew Wheeler.
Wheeler is not new to Washington, D.C. or to the EPA. He began working there after law school, and he later worked for Oklahoma Senator James Inhofe, a brazen denier of climate science. Wheeler, the former coal lobbyist, said on Friday that he would stick with Trump's priorities.
In order to get some ideas about what Wheeler might pretend for the EPA, H2O Radio spoke with Sarah Krakoff, a law professor at the University of Colorado who specializes in natural resources and American Indian law. She predicts that Wheeler will have the same anti-environmental protection agenda of Pruitt.
But, you know, without the personal peccadilloes and the, you know, strange desire to use the office for his own good. You know, he'll be a more professional, cleaner, more efficient version of the same overall substantive agenda is one very distinct possibility.
But it's possible a few things will be good for federal environmental law. For example, Krakoff very cautiously speculated about some things Wheeler might not pursue as Pruitt did, like the attack on California's vehicle emission standards, mainly because it was likely to involve protracted, costly litigation.
The upsides for America are that it's good not to have our public servants, very prominent public servants, engaging in behaviors that just seem to be utterly beyond the pale. The potential downside for the environment, environmental protection, and people who care about enforcing our environmental laws is that a more low-profile, more knowledgeable, much, much savvier public servant could quietly do just as much or more damage because people perhaps won't be as much up in arms and paying attention.
And she speculates Wheeler may respect EPA staffers more, which is good for the long term, as there will be less morale damage and fewer departures from the agency.
In two very different parts of the world, many, including indigenous peoples, are celebrating the designation of World Heritage Sites.
UNESCO designated Cherribiquet National Park in Colombia. It has one of the highest rates of plant diversity in the northern Amazon and is now the largest protected rainforest in the world, according to The Independent, with nearly 3,000 animal and plant species.
The area had been off limits, but after a peace agreement was signed by the government and it is now opening up to scientific research.
The other site listed last week is about 4,000 miles away in Canada's boreal forest, and it's called Pimacoanaki, the land that gives life. It straddles Manitoba and Ontario.
The Natural Resources Defense Council says that First Nations have been fighting for 17 years to have the 7-million-acre region named a World Heritage Site to protect it from encroaching development like logging. Being added to the World Heritage List gives these areas new legal protections.
It's been hot all over the planet. Records have been broken in many places. For example, a city in Algeria set an all-time high temperature for the African continent of 123 degrees.
In northern Siberia, on the coast of the Arctic Ocean, the temperature reached 90 degrees on July 5th, a stunning 40 degrees above normal.
At UCLA in Southern California last Friday, the temperature reached 111 degrees, the hottest ever recorded there, breaking the old record by two notches.
Quebec has had record high temperatures during a heat wave that's being blamed for at least 54 deaths. Many of the victims were over 65 and had prior physical or mental health ailments. Montreal reached a record of almost 98 degrees.
Sydney, Australia, where it is winter, saw 2 days last week of 77 degrees, the warmest 2 days in July in nearly 160 years of records.
As Al Jazeera notes, the hot temperatures all over the planet don't necessarily prove climate change theories. However, 2018 is likely to be one of the five warmest years on the planet since instrumental records began in 1880.
Heat has also been a problem in Iran, where in some areas the temperature rose to about 122.
The country has been in drought for 14 years, and climate refugees have moved to urban areas because they couldn't farm anymore. A shortage of drinking water prompted people in southwest Iran to take to the streets in protest.
The Financial Tribune, based in Tehran, reports that last fall was the driest in nearly 70 years, with rainfall down to about half of average.
And finally this week, it's official. Spending time in nature has significant health benefits, like lowering your risk of type 2 diabetes, reducing cardiovascular disease, and helping with high blood pressure.
According to new research from the University of East Anglia, people who spend time in green spaces are more likely to report overall good health. Green spaces were defined as open, undeveloped land with natural vegetation and included urban parks.
In a press release from the university, the authors compared the health of people with little access to green spaces with people who had high exposure. While people living near green spaces likely have more opportunities for physical exercise and socializing, the report suggests that the physical environment itself may offer benefits by exposing people to a variety of bacteria present in natural areas. Those bacteria may boost the immune system and reduce inflammation.
One really interesting result they found is that exposure to green space significantly reduces people's levels of salivary cortisol, a physiological marker of stress.
The research team studied data from 20 countries, including Japan, where something called shinrin-yoku, or forest bathing, is already a popular practice.
Forest bathing was developed there in the 1980s and has become a cornerstone of Japanese preventive health care. There have been numerous studies that document the benefits of dousing oneself in the natural world, including research that suggests that phytoncides, organic compounds with antibacterial properties released by trees, could explain the health-boosting properties of forests. And you don't have to hike or mountaineer, you just need to be in nature.
The researchers hope that their findings will prompt healthcare professionals to recommend that patients spend more time outside. So perhaps next time you go to the doctor with a complaint, they might prescribe, take two trees and call me in the morning. This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association, highlighting the latest cost-effective strategies to manage aging infrastructure at the Water Infrastructure Conference and Expo, October 28th to 31st in Atlanta. Learn more at awwa.org/H2O Infocon.
American actress Scarlett Johansson was set to be cast as Tex Gill, a transgender man in the massage parlor sex worker business in the 1970s and 80s. Johansson has since then withdrawn herself from the role. Johansson published another statement claiming after this experience, she learned a lot about issues within the transgender community. NewNowNext.com quotes Johansson's statement saying, quote, "While I would have loved the opportunity to bring Dante's story and transition to life, I understand why many feel he should be portrayed by a transgender person. And I am thankful that this casting debate, albeit controversial, has sparked a larger conversation about diversity and representation in film," end quote. Currently, there are no replacements for what would have been Johansson's role. You're listening to the Zelos and Jenny Yokoyama Show, also known as the KBU Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and as always, we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Emmett White, Summer Barraza, and Lucas Campbell. Our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama, and the producer and KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is myself, Zelzelis Marchant. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Zelzelis Marchant.
And I am Jenny Yokoyama. Coming up on Monday morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on More Talk Radio, Cecil and Celeste take your calls. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour burrows down to the roots of the great issues of our time. And at 10 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein talks to environmental writer, biologist, and anti-fracking activist Sandra Steingraber about how communities are fighting back against fracking. At 11, Making Contact dives into Afrofuturism with three women you need to know. Then, the case for the end of policing. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on that donate button. Well, this has been fun. Have a night, Zelis.
Great. Yeah, good night.
Yeah, thanks for listening to the Zelis and Jenna Show, a.k.a. your Friday evening news.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, Americans, many of them anyway, have been filled with outrage and anger and sadness at the fact that immigrants escaping violence and deprivation, some of it visited on them by U.S. policy and practice, are being treated as criminals at the U.S. border. Children being literally pulled from their parents' arms and locked up in pens. And it's all in aid of what exactly? The truth is, U.S. policy on immigration has long veiled, thinly, in abject cruelty and racism. And so while outrage at family separation at the Mexican border is a fine starting point for a movement for change, it cannot be its end. We'll talk about